Your childhoods were rough, to say the least, and in this book you take turns telling your stories, first with your own dysfunctional families, then onto a dysfunctional foster system, before it's a story of triumph. So I'm going to start with you, Alexis. If you can, in a nutshell, tell us a little bit about the background that you have, your childhood.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always start with when I was a child, and I lived with my biological mother. And then when I was actually 6 years old, she committed suicide. And I didn't find out until much later that actually my grandma also committed suicide. So that's something that runs in our family. But then after losing my mother, I went and lived with my biological father. And around that time is when the abuse started. And it was physical, sexual, and emotional abuse for about 8 years until I was 13 and I was forced to speak up and say something. And that was the time when I entered the foster care system. And I went and lived with my aunt and uncle, where it wasn't the greatest placement. It was very much emotionally and mentally abusive. And so lived with them for a few years. And during this time, I was actually in an abusive relationship. And then graduated high school in 2012. And then that fall, I went off to college. 1 week after I graduated high school, I moved out and went off to school. And so I went to the University of Michigan, Flint first, following that abusive boyfriend. And then it wasn't until, I think it was 2014, when I transferred to Western Michigan University, where I actually graduated with 2 degrees, a certification and a minor. And that's where I also met my husband, Justin.
So, Justin, that's an intro to you. If you can tell us a little about your background.
So I entered the foster care system at 9 years old, largely due to my parents' substance abuse and issues that they were having. And it was normal for us to just grow up in environments filled with poverty, community sold drugs, and so many other things. And that really became the normal for the most part. With that, so many things that my parents suffered with and growing up realizing as an adult that there are 3 generations of domestic violence on my dad's side and 2 generations of drug abuse on my mom's side. So realizing that this is not just something that my parents just put us through, but this is something that's generational, something that's been normalized. Where we internalize our feelings, we react with violence and just anger. And that's been played out throughout so much of my life, especially in my teenage years, when I can recall going home from school one day at 13 years old and just randomly getting into altercation with some high school kids. And I was hit in the mouth with a brick where I lost about four to six of my teeth, or I think 4 teeth completely and like 2 more chipped. And just going through that process where I didn't have the mental health resource to help me cope with such a different lifestyle of going back to school with my smile taken away and really trying to figure out how do I deal with these circumstances mentally of not having parents, not having family to really support me emotionally and mentally that I needed, and really going through ultimately the foster care system where, you know, you don't have the family support that you need. And for me, I had my parents like around, like not more than 30, 40 minutes away, but dealing with ideas and feelings that they didn't want me or love me because they never visited me. And just processing that my entire time, but was able to eventually have a support system and community and church who got me and helped me get to college and believed in me to do that. And eventually where I met Alexis, and she took me all around the world, literally to 30 different countries. And I'm skipping a lot, but yeah, it's just the transition into adulthood has been a lot better transition into teenage years and the foster care system.
I've got to think that writing this book together, and it's a very emotional book to read. I had to walk away at times just to catch my breath and then sit down again. Although at the same time, it was incredibly inspiring and mesmerizing to see how you were going to get through this, and you did get through it. Writing this together must have really developed your bond, understanding of each other and of yourselves. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we started the book, it started as more of a journey of us getting closer together before we got married, just because we never really experienced what a healthy relationship looked like. I didn't until I met my foster now adoptive parents, and Justin not until really he got to college. So we're engaged and we're like, okay, so how do we make sure that we're having a successful and healthy relationship moving forward when the divorce rate's so high, and then given the fact that we're an interracial couple, and with all the trauma that we experienced. So we're like, how can we get closer together before we get married? So the project more or less started as a selfish endeavor. And then it turned into something so much bigger than us, where we realize that our story has the capacity to have an impact on really millions of people. And so that's really what we held on to in this process. And on days where it was really, really difficult to get through, lots of ugly crying, lots of procrastinating on my part just because it was so hard to write about certain things. But this book really wouldn't have happened without our partnership through it, because we both bring certain things to the table, where Justin is the super creative, innovative writer, saw how to bring this together, and I'm the logistics type A business person, where I was one who sort of laid out the book and developed the marketing and all that strategy. So because of our collaboration, it is what it is today, and it wouldn't have happened, you know, without that. And then in the process, when we printed off the first draft of our book, we decided that we were going to read each other's parts out loud. And as you saw from reading the book, we alternate between each other's parts. And we did that also on purpose for readers, to show that we had to go through individual journeys of healing and self-discovery before we could come together and have a healthy relationship. And so when we were reading each other's parts out loud, it was actually really hard just because, you know, it really forces you to look at that person, which is your future spouse, and know that all these things happen to them. And it's not that we didn't know these things before, but when you write a book, you have to bring emotion and feelings and all these things into it, where we revealed all these things to each other before, but we had to essentially relive all of the situations together. And so it really did help us get closer together through all the ugly crying, the holding hands, and literally sitting next to each other writing it.
So there were a lot of similarities between what you experienced, but a lot of differences too. Justin, one of the things that struck me about your childhood, that as abusive and dysfunctional as it could be at times, and you would go to live with either relatives or foster parents, foster families, you still had that longing that kept coming back again and again to rebond with your biological family. How important was that to you? And there is a wonderful photo at the end of the book of you dancing with your mother at your wedding. Talk about that need for biological connection, and then the difficulty of letting go of toxic relationships.
Yeah, of course. I think that's a great question. And it's something that almost every foster youth needs to deal with, unless, I mentioned this in the book, where unless your parents are passed away, which really that doesn't resolve the issue. That, I mean, there were times in my childhood where I would just say, and I regret saying this, but just, I wish my parents weren't alive, because that would give them an excuse not to care for me or not to be there for me physically. And so many foster care youth are really dealing with this thing of, why didn't my parents want to be there? Especially if you remember your parents, if you've interacted with them, if you can get back to them, you can, like I talked about in the book, I caught the bus to see them. And it's just that emptiness and this void you're trying to fill of being good enough to love, or deserving their love, or deserving them. And it's kind of a void that you just really have to travel on a deep, dark path alone and just kind of dig deep. And I talk about this in the book, where my spirituality really got me to that point, and other people around me, where I had to redefine family and community and those who were really around me, who loved me and cared about me. I had to value the people who were in my life and actively in my life and intentional about supporting me and loving me. And it's the daily decision and process that each individual, if you don't have active parents in your life, you need to really figure out and be intentional about, and be aware that you shouldn't operate out of that void of trying to deserve love or work for somebody's love. It's a lifelong journey, and I have to be intentional about it every day. And even to this day, you know, I have to be intentional about my actions and what I do.
And Alexis, in your story, what struck me is something that I think an unfortunately large number of women and girls go through in their lives with abusive relationships. In your case, you mentioned him earlier, an ex-boyfriend, Sean, and that you couldn't and couldn't and couldn't leave him for a very long time. You kept coming back to that abusive relationship. And I think for a lot of people who haven't been through that sort of thing, they wonder why you can't walk away. Talk to those women out there. What was that held you back, and what finally broke you free?
Yeah, an average abusive relationship is 7 years, and an average survivor of that relationship tries to leave 7 times. That's a statistic that I found, and that was extremely accurate for my situation, because mine was 8 years, and it was off and on, and I tried to leave at least 7 times. And I think for myself, and what so many women don't realize is, if they don't know what their identity is rooted in, and for myself, I had no idea who I was, what I stood for, anything really. I wasn't able to form my identity at all, just because we started that relationship when I was 13, which are the most formative years of figuring out who you are, what you stand for, what do you want to leave in this world, just all of those things. And so if you don't have a good foundation of that, of your identity and myself, it's now rooted in my faith, being a Christian. And so that was a huge reason of why I was able to walk away. It was because around 2016, when I was in South Africa, I was forced to be alone. And that was the worst thing somebody could have done to me at that time, I think. Kind of torture of forcing myself to be by myself, just because I hated myself so much. And I was just in a season of life where being alone was incredibly difficult. But when you're on the other side of the world, away from everything that you know and love, you have to start to figure out who you are. What do you like to do by yourself? And I went out to meals for myself. I went to the movies, all these different things. And then I started going to church again. And for me, it was, you know, who am I? What do I want? What do I want my legacy to be on this world? And if I have children, do I want my children to be a part of his life where he's incredibly unhealthy? And unfortunately, children take up habits and characteristics of their mother and father. And so I thought to myself, I don't want more of him in this world. And so that was a huge reason for me of being able to leave. And even though I met my foster now adoptive parents in 2011, I think it was. So I knew them for at least 4 years. But I mean, I only lived with them for about 6 months, but I knew them for several years. And I would go to my dad and I would ask him, do you say these things to Kim, which is his wife and my mom? And I would say, do you say these things to her? And he would look at me like I'm crazy. He's like, why would I ever say these things to her? I love her. And I'm like, well, that's normal for me, my daily life. And so if you don't have something to model it after, if you don't have examples, if you don't know anything about what a healthy relationship looks like, then how do you know that, how do you know what it should be in your life? And for myself, relationships always existed with so much just abuse and toxicity around the way you speak to each other, the way you handle arguments, the hitting and all these different toxic things. And then when I met my foster parents and seeing how they talk to each other with so much love and kindness, I thought to myself, you know, they must have did something special, or God must love them a little extra, because I don't deserve that. And I must have done something to deserve that. And I know, and I see that with a lot of survivors of sexual abuse or sexual assault, that there's so much guilt and shame that's kind of placed upon us by our abuser. And we internalize that and we take that forward into our personal relationships. And something else to keep in mind is the ACEs assessment. If you've ever heard of that, it's adverse child experiences. And when you take this assessment, it's on a scale of 1 to 10 of basically how many traumas you've gone through. And for myself, I got the highest score and Justin got a 9. And what that indicates is that we're predisposed to so many different things, such as domestic violence, drug abuse, toxic relationships, all these different things we're more accustomed to just because of the things that we've gone through. So knowing the traumas that you've gone through, being able to reflect on those, that allows you to heal from it. If you don't understand the root of something, how do you heal from it and move forward? You're just going to keep throwing Band-Aids on it with probably other addictions. Like for myself, I noticed that I started getting addicted to ibuprofen and things like that. So addiction goes out in different ways unless we find a way to deal with those things from our past, and how can we move forward from it.
Both of you came to Kalamazoo from different places, and both of you attended Western Michigan University. And that right there is going against the odds for a lot of foster children. And both of you also became part of the CETA Scholars Program. So talk about how that changed your lives. And, well, it also brought you together.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, most importantly, it helped me meet my wife. And that's always amazing, of course. That's life-changing in itself. But the program is very unique, and it's one of its kind throughout the entire country, actually, where I feel like a program like this needs to be in place for even traditional students who are not in foster care. But it's a program where each and every student who comes into the program needs to be a former foster youth or current foster youth youth who've experienced foster care in higher education, and they basically give you, the program gives you a campus coach where they help you figure out college or help you transition into this world, this new world that you're not familiar with. And really only 3% of foster youth graduate from college. And programs like this are really helping students and foster youth beat the odds, where they give you campus coaches. These campus coaches walk you through the college process. They help you kind of figure out budgeting and other aspects of adult life, just financial literacy. And summer early transition week was something that freshmen or people who are entering the program come into to help you get familiar with where your classes are, your campus coach, and the program altogether and the university, as well as I actually have been working with CETA to help students transition from college and transition successfully into adulthood, because college can sometimes be a barrier between foster youth becoming homeless. And if you're in college for 4 or 5 years, a lot of foster care youth who are in this program who don't want to graduate because they know that there's chances that they can become homeless. So I'm working with CETA right now to help students successfully transition from college and into adulthood, into their job, career, housing, and other aspects of life.
Both of you participated in study abroad during your college years. And as you mentioned earlier, Justin, you traveled to, 30 different countries all over the world. What did that teach you about independence, confidence, what you can handle, and how other cultures might compare to your own and other relationships across the world?
The experience, and I have to say, this is probably one of my favorite parts of the book when we talk about our traveling experience and chapter City Kids Travel the Globe, because really it all started for me really when, even before traveling, this idea of overcoming and using failure as a way to launch forward. When I was able to, I was applying to college and I did terrible on my ACT. And I was down on myself and I just felt terrible. And I took it again and had to be honest with myself and said, I put my full effort forward and that I do my best. And once I actually did my best, my score improved a lot. So just that really showed me that, you know, the ability to overcome circumstances and being the first person in my family to go to college. Like, I've grown up in Detroit for like 17 to 18 years. And then I go 2 hours away from Kalamazoo, which sometimes felt like another country. But then, you know, at the end of my freshman year, going to another country, and you hear the story about me somewhat getting stranded in China on my way to South Korea, and having a 14-hour layover in a different airport, and I got to book a hotel at midnight. I don't know what I'm doing and what's going on. And that experience let me know, like, getting through that is like, I'm fine now. I'm in another country. I'm by myself and I figured it out. Really allowed me to say, I can really figure this out, and I can don't have to let the barriers of my community or my family or these generational patterns really hold me back. And I'm kind of used to just challenging myself and being curious about the new opportunities and ideas out there and just testing the waters. And failure has taught me so much, and my study abroad experience has taught me so much that, I mean, I would encourage every single Black individual, man or woman, to travel abroad. I would encourage each and every foster youth to travel abroad just to understand that we can go beyond the barriers. And that is a perfect example of us doing that.
Talk about the foster program. You know, sometimes I feel like we hear a lot of horror stories. You've got your share of your own, but it can also be something that's wonderful. Yours, Alexis, ended up with being your true family. What can we do to fix this program? And I realize you can't fix the whole thing at once here, this system, but also what is good about it? If someone is considering fostering children, what should they know?
I think Alexis can speak more to this, but I feel like it's so many things that you can consider. But one thing is that I think a lot of times foster parents or people who consider it fail because they view themselves as a hero coming to save this poor little child that's been abused and been through a lot. They're coming to save them and bring them to a new environment. But what you don't know is that you're bringing a child out of their normal and into chaos when you're bringing them into your home, because it's so much, even I talked about this in the book, the just being organized and having regular dinner and so many other things, that could be chaos for somebody who's not used to it. And really utilizing that community aspect, understanding that you are not a hero, it takes a community, and there will be no immediate change, but if you want to do this, it'll be something you need to be consistent with and something that is a long-term success. It's going to be daily, intentional work, but it'll be long-term change and success, something that won't happen overnight and you won't be a hero. But ultimately, the end result, it may not always be what you think, but it will always be rewarding and just serving other people who you know need to be served in your heart.
How do you define healthy relationships today? Looking back in hindsight, so many lessons that you've learned, and I understand that's part of the point that you're trying to make with this book on what people should know about healthy relationships, whether they're romantic marital relationships or parent-child. Maybe, Alexis, you can talk to that.
For myself, it really just had to, I did a lot of research online, and then I started surrounding myself with individuals that I knew kind of fit those markers of what I was reading online from different blogs and websites and things on trying to understand what makes a healthy relationship versus an unhealthy one. And for anybody that's listening and is in a relationship right now and they just want to assess to see, is the relationship I'm in right now, is that healthy? We have a checklist on our website where it's called Healthy versus Unhealthy Healthy Checklist. And it's free. This is the exact assessment that I took when I was in that abusive relationship. And that really helped me visually see that really nothing about this relationship is worth being held onto and how unhealthy it really is and detrimental for my future, for my mental health. Your family, one thing that I really learned in healthy relationships with family is boundaries. And that was one of the biggest things that both of us have had to learn. Given that I'm a bit older than Justin, I learned that first. And then after meeting his family, I told him, you know, you're going to really have to work to set up these healthy boundaries or else you're going to go crazy or you're going to sacrifice too much of yourself and your future for people that aren't necessarily worth that sacrifice. And so we had to have a lot of these conversations. And so I would say a lot of it comes down to the boundaries aspect of it. But then just really knowing what your worth is. And again, knowing what you are rooted in. And so if you know that you are worth so much more than settling and so much more than these unhealthy relationships, then why would you settle for it? Why would you take anything less? So now that you look through that lens that anybody that approaches you to start a relationship or to come back to a relationship, now that you have that lens of your value and your worth and your identity, and you're looking through that, then you think to yourself, why would I go back? I've made it through so much. Why would I go back to something that was poisoning me and poisoning my future or potentially my children? And so I think a lot of it comes down to, again, who are you? What is your identity? And really establishing those healthy boundaries as you think about family, romantic relationships, and even professional relationships. I still struggle with toxic professional relationships now being business owners and things and working around so many individuals that are building and growing as well. Good intention doesn't always mean good impact. And that goes in our personal and professional life as well.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for taking a moment out of your very busy days to talk about your book, Redefining Normal, and sharing a little bit of your incredible lives. And I'm so glad you found each other and that you found your best selves. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for having us on here. It's a blessing for us to be on here and be able to talk to you and really share our story and just continue the conversation of redefining normal.